Ramble.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
That was my attempt at a gremlin thing. Welcome to Guilty Pleasures, the show that loves what it loves. This week we're talking about gremlins. You know their song, little song Gizmo sings. Wait, Miles, can you do it better?
That's
why I should have done that. Well, hey, Garrick and Kelsey are out doing the Thanksgiving festivities, but I got our producer extraordinaire, Miles B, in the studio. Hey, Miles.
Woo, Mogwai.
Miles is kind of like what happens if you feed Kelsey after midnight. So
that's correct.
We're happy to have you.
A scaly sort of lizard.
And very excited to have her joining us in the virtual studio today. You know her from You Season 3 and the excellent podcast Haunt the Johnsons. Shalita Grant is in the house. Hello, Shalita.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Shalita, okay, before we get into Gremlins, it is such a pleasure to have you in You, which is one of my favorite shows. I almost want to call it a guilty pleasure of mine because I like it. It is presented as a chick flick show, but it's not. It's got death. Uh-huh. It's got murder. I think it's such a brilliant subversion on the rom-com tropes. And in season three, you play Sherry Conrad. You are a momfluencer. You are, forgive me for saying, just perfectly one of the worst people of all time. And then by the end, my absolute favorite part of the show. So congratulations, first of all.
Thank you. Yes, I love it. You know, Zach, you know, when we were shooting this, I was like, wow, it's going to be so nice. People are going to be like, I hated you. Oh, and I'm gonna just relish it because I got a nice face. You know, this face, people want to talk to it and they stop and I entered a comfortable show. So people swear they don't know me from TV. They know me from like church or like, you know,
you got sweet face syndrome.
Face syndrome.
Mm-hmm. I get it.
Like, oh, I can't wait to show people I got another side. You know what I mean? I make you feel other things. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. That is awesome.
But then you love me because I don't mean it. But yeah.
I mean, as a fellow sweet facer, I feel your pain. It's so hard to be so lovable.
Mm. Yes. And that's too, like you were saying, like, I feel like you is a guilty pleasure. And I was looking at you. I was like, yeah, because you got a Joe thing about you, Zach.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Nice to see like a little doppelganger situation. Like, this is a different light. This is if Zach went back. Because y'all do kind of have the same like vibe. And you're wearing a hat. It's just now blue.
That's
right.
That's
true. It's probably the same style. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like,
I do look a little bit like Joe undercover right now.
Now that you say that, I do see.
Look, Garrick's not here, so to punish him, I wore contacts because he thinks my eyes are so beautiful. But certainly in the hat, I look like I could be stalking my future love interest. No further comment.
You do. So I get it. You get it. I get it. It's good.
This is the first and probably last time I'll ever be compared to Penn Badgley, and I don't even want to ruin this moment. I just want to take this compliment and run with it. It feels great.
Yeah, just keep it going. Mm-hmm. Just keep it going.
I will say that when I started watching the show, the way that in the show you and your character send up influencer culture, I turned to my fiance Megan. I'm like, well, I should just quit. I need to stop. I need to delete all my accounts. I hate myself and who I've become. So thank you, Shalita, for that eye-opening moment.
You're welcome. I always aspire, you know, with all of my characters.
To make people hate or hate themselves?
No matter what they say about them, you know, like, I'm always like, there's a heart in there and there's a reason, you know? So for me, it's like Sherry encompasses so many audiences. She's got the influencer audience. She's got the mom of twins. You know, that's a different kind of mom. You've got, you know, like interracial dating. You've got, you know, swingers. You've got she just, you know, represents so many bisexual women, you know, who are totally into like period sinking and shit. And like, you know, like this body positivity, you know, like all of that. Like she just represents all of it and she sends it up. And it's important because when you look closely at anything, you start seeing the bullshit, no matter where you are, you know, like to some beautiful chapel, you know, you take a look and you're like, actually, this shit is really, you know, sticks and clay here. You know what I mean? Like, how the hell do they keep this going? You know, like you can find something about anything if you look closely enough. But if at the end, you know, your conclusion is, it's okay, it's fine. You know, it's, I think that that's great.
Well, I'm not just blowing smoke up your ass. Genuinely, my favorite part of the season. And the Swingers episode is one of the most fun hours of television this year. So I will say no more, but to our listeners, they should check it out because it's just a blast. But we're not talking about you today. We are talking about you. We're talking about Gremlins. So Gremlins, the 1980s Joe Dante classic. I can give a little synopsis and then I want to hear it first. Shalita, what does this movie mean to you?
Oh, you know, I'm gonna keep it real with you, Zach. You know, when you asked me what I wanted to see, everything like that, I was like, oh, you know what? I just watched Gremlins on Netflix.
So you thought it'd be easy.
Yeah, it's like something recent. So for me, Gremlins represents a very recent moment in my life where I look back. Let me say this. I really love horror films. I love horror. I love all the subgenres. There's some shit for me and everything. You know what I mean? Like, I love it all. And I've got my many reasons. One of them is that the horror genre, right? Like, it's one of the most like consistent genres with that I can count on that'll have like a strong female lead, right? And you know, there is the final girl of it all, right? So basically, this girl, like, goes through life, right? Just, like, totally unassuming, sometimes, like, super innocent, sometimes super not. But then, like, the craziest shit happens. She might lose fingernails, toes, arms. She's going to lose family members, definitely.
Shalita, please.
She's going to lose lovers. Yes, definitely. But you know what? By the end of it, she killed the monster. Mm-hmm. And she limping up out of there.
Horror is where the sweet faces of the world get to rise up.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when I was like busting my ass in LA when I first got here, let me tell you something. I decided to make friends with my emotion of disappointment because that emotion, disappointment, listen, when you like figure out what that is, you realize like, wow, like my reaction to this emotion makes me do some crazy shit. And so I was like, I'm going to be disappointed a lot. I'm an actress. It's just the name of the game. So I have to figure out how to get fine with rejection and disappointment and like, you know, having hope and having a really good imagination and being able to like see myself there and I like sign the contract and then to get the call that you didn't even make it past the second callback. It's like, are you fucking kidding me? I need that money. I would hate watch shit that rejected me and I would laugh. It would be my favorite thing to do. And I had a lot of things to watch because I got rejected from a lot of different places. So I used all that time I wasn't working looking at those projects.
Do a follow-up Guilty Pleasures episode where you just shit on every role that turned you down.
Yeah, I was like, actually, didn't want it anyway. This looks like shit.
Damn right. Yeah. Take that, Warner Brothers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Your idea actually sucked. So
you know what? Turns out I don't want to be Thor. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Captain America who?
Yes. I I turned my nose up at a couple Oscar winners too. It's like, oh, fuck off, you know?
Yeah.
Who cares about those statues?
You hear us, Benedict Cumberbatch.
That's right, Cumberbatch. Yeah, we're coming Cumberbatch. For you, Cumberbatch. Get step off. Are you actually British or is it pretend, okay?
Exactly. I didn't buy that accent.
I don't buy that for a second. You're from Kentucky and we know it,
yes,
Benedict.
Exactly.
Not the good part of Kentucky.
Wow.
And by the way, I would argue that the Gizmo the Mogwai is the final girl of this movie.
Yes, yes.
I believe so.
And you know what?
Also got turned down for Thor, you know, justice for Gizmo.
He's so sweet. Like he got through it with sweetness, like mm-hmm. the whole time. No, none of the humans wanted to kill him. Actually, mm-hmm. the person that was actually kind of, he was stolen from, came back and got his ass. Mm-hmm. He was like, the mother ones, hell, they can yeah. blow up, get burnt, whatever, who cares?
Yeah.
But this one right here, we got to keep. And that
Gizmo's
actually
a real one.
Is a really good, mm-hmm. a good moral.
That's right.
Listen up, kids at home. Save the gizmos in your life. Let me hit us with a quick synopsis and then we'll dive in, all right? So, Gremlins, if you have not seen the Steven Spielberg-produced Joe Dante 1980s classic, follows Billy on Christmas time when his dad brings home a Mogwai, a mysterious Chinese creature of sorts. And it only comes with three rules. Say it with me. No light.
Light.
No, light.
No,
no
water.
Water. No food after midnight. What are just good rules. Just
in general, no bright
just
lights.
Good rules for people.
Yeah, I mean, hold on, the third one only. Yeah,
third one is good, but I guess it's no water.
Carry on.
Have a controlled diet. Lurk in the shadows. That's the key right. to being a good person. And don't drink water.
No.
Dehydration. God forbid.
Don't do it.
And wouldn't you know that dastardly Billy, why he breaks all three of those rules. You stupid. God damn it, Billy. Mm. And then he's got the Mogwai's duplicate. They become mean old gremlins. They make, they wreak havoc. And guess what? Billy and Gizmo, they got to save the day.
This is
Gremlins.
Woo! Miles,
I've made you sit and sit quietly while I've just gushed about Shalita for a long time. So I want to know, you grew up with this movie, as did I. This is like just in the back of my consciousness. So what is it for you?
I probably haven't watched this movie in 20 years. and I remember it as being a masterpiece. And I loved this movie as a kid. I wanted a Mogwai. I remember specifically being like, asking my parents for Christmas, like, can I get a Mogwai toy? Can I get like some sort of thing? Because Mogwai is so cute. And watching this movie, most of it, I was like, this is baller. I love this movie. It's like three different movies. It's a regular Christmas movie at the beginning. It's a thriller in the middle. And then it's Jackass with Gremlins at the end, which is so jarring. The separation between those movies is so crazy. And we will get into it. But I wanted a Mogwai so badly. And unfortunately, Gizmo only looks cute every third shot, and otherwise, and he looks terrifying in the other ones. So I was expecting to be like, oh man, I even remember like I was watching in the living room and I was like telling, you know, my wife and our roommate, I was like, you know, oh, Mogwai, he's so cute. Gizmo's coming. He's coming. And I was like, that is not what I remember him looking like. He looks fucked up.
Well, let's jump in right in there. Let's talk about Gizmo. I mean, Shalita, did you ever have those same childhood fantasies?
Of keeping him? Yeah, I remember Gremlins like it's a vague memory. It's been about 25 years since I watched it. But yeah, like I did think that he was super cute. But because of my love of the horror, every October I have a private film festival, right? And so a lot of times I pull stuff back from the past. And I pulled out Hellraiser. Remember Hellraiser?
Yeah.
Now that movie scared the cowboy shit out of me, okay? When I was like 8 years old, like I was fucking terrified. Didn't need to see it again because I was like, that is literally the scariest movie on the planet. I pulled that piece of shit out today. You could see the track that the monster comes on. Like, it's just raggedy as hell. Like, the special effects are no longer special. Like, it's just a piece of shit right now. It's just like, I was scared of this.
There's something crazy about the way that, like, this era of movies, our brains filled in some of the details. And I kind of, I miss that because you are right, Miles. You go back, Gizmo, I mean, he sounds adorable. The sounds that he makes, I think, is what really lasts in our mind.
Yes!
But then his little face, you're like, oh my God, oh, what fucking old mutated monkey is this?
He looks like a toy. Like, he just looks like a toy.
Like,
yeah, it's like your worst, like your best childhood dream that the toy will come alive, like come true, I guess. But it's also like it can't get wet or it'll like
so
mutate and reproduce. Yeah.
I had an intense fantasy as a kid of having a pet monkey. And I think that this character is very intelligently designed to have what's cute about a monkey, but it's shorter, it's stouter, his face is wide. He's got the big cute ears like from a puppy dog and his voice. And he talks, he speaks, he understands us. Like, we all wanted to have a dog that we could talk to and the dog understands us. So it just, like, at its very core level, it gets that desire that we all have and just checks every single box. It almost feels like a cheat code.
Yeah, it's like, it's exactly that, Zach. Like, that's so good because I just finished the ending about 5 minutes before we got on. So it's fresh, if you will. But the last thing that the previous owner says, he says, you all treat the Mogwai like you treat everything in nature.
Oh, yeah. That's beautiful.
And,
I love this.
And like, that's so prescient for like the moment we're in right fucking now with like climate change and like everything that we aren't doing, won't do, are in denial of. And we're just kind of like Billy in them, just like, whoops, oil spilled. It's a spill.
Yeah.
And that's what we call it. We literally call it an oil spill, not a fucking oil disaster.
An oil oopsie.
Exactly, it's an oopsie. Just like the fucking dad. Like, I know we're going to talk about the Mogwai, but I can't wait to go in on the dad, but go on. Get in it.
Go, fucking lay into the dad. Go.
The inventor
go,
dad.
Okay, so go. The father is a really good, like, just riffing off of what you said, Zach. Like, I'm going to be super direct about it, but like, yeah, I'm going to put it out there. Going to put
Say
it out
He's
there.
He's not a real person. He's
no, I'm not going where you think I'm going. I'm going to go somewhere completely different. I don't think that we should be having exotic animals as pets. I don't think, I think the law should just fully outright, that's not for us because we don't fucking know what we're doing and they're expensive. And as much as us Americans love to think we're all fucking rich, we're balling out of control, we're fucking broke as a joke. We are one broken bone away from the corner, okay? All of us. So, you know, we shouldn't have expensive animals that require a lot of care. We just shouldn't have that right.
We should go back in time, get a time machine, find childhood Zach who said, I want a pet monkey. Smack that motherfucker in the face and say, no, baby Zach.
No monkey.
And then no monkey for you.
It is very irresponsible.
It is.
But the father is representative of that very, like, who we are as a culture, like how we behave.
Oh,
first of fucking all, we all think, there's like this very, like, very American thing about us where we all think that we're much better at our jobs than we actually are, okay? The father, he called himself an inventor. No, he is not.
Nope.
In fact, he's a waster of time and an injurer of people.
My favorite type of character in any media is the idiot, bad inventor father. It's him, Stew Pickles. It's such a funny, specific trope of dad who thinks he's going to come up with a better way to invent, to do things, and invents the worst version. But I'm sorry, please go on.
Yes, or it just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. It's useless. It is, he took all of his life force, worked on this thing, and it doesn't fucking work.
The bathroom buddy? Come on. I mean, the bathroom buddy is a mess.
It's terrible. The juicer, like nothing. The toaster, it's like
some of the best laughs in the movie when like the egg crack doesn't work.
And it's just so funny.
It's disgusting. And so he fucking like used his money. And I love when the guy came back and he fucking dropped them little $200, like, fuck this money. He uses his money and like his negotiation techniques with a child, okay? And swindles a child out of the Mogwai and then proceeded to wreak havoc on his own community, almost lost his child several times.
And had no remorse.
Yeah.
No remorse from him.
There was no remorse. That last scene is so unsatisfying.
He just made an oil oopsie.
Are you kidding me? You don't have any, like, you just killed an old lady, even though she was a major bitch, but she's dead.
She's
dead, and she would still be alive had you not done any of the things you did before.
There is a science teacher with a syringe in his ass.
I can't believe they killed Mr. Hansen. I felt like that guy, that was devastating. By the way, this movie
that was
brutal. There's just so many brutal things happening in this movie, and like people for sure died. It was good to see the like racist guy who was drunk driving around. Good to see him get hit by a dump truck or whatever they back into him. I was like, great.
Snowplow to oblivion.
We all love that.
That was gratifying. It was good to see the I don't know why.
We stand a racist getting snowplowed.
We love that.
We don't see it enough. That was so great. It's just like, oh, God, this is great.
She didn't deserve it, but the woman who went up the stairs and shot out the window, hilarious. I mean, come on. That was great.
If you do not laugh at an old woman getting yeeted out the window because her accessibility... I don't know what you call it.
Like she did nothing wrong. It just
this
was so
poor
funny.
Lady who just gets shot out the window like a cannon. Oh, God. It's just... In the movie's very cartoonish, right? Joe Dante loves B movies. This is a B movie with an A movie budget produced by some of the best people in the world. So you get that joy, and like it's a dark movie, but it's really funny, really weird.
It's really funny.
And I was surprised at how dark it was, because I remember as a kid, I like loved it. I think I was a little scared of the, what are they even called? The Mogwai, but
the gremlins.
Lizards. The gremlins. Oh, the obviously, gremlins. Obviously yeah. The gremlins. But
the title.
Yeah, it's
the titular
title.
Role.
I should have read the title. But,
the titular role.
It's horrible to watch like Gizmo get, when he's like regurgitating the other gremlins, it's horrifying. He's like screaming in pain. All the moments when the Mogwai were like being hurt, or even the shot, he's like giving one of them the shot. Mr. Hansen's like, you know, giving, he's like taking blood or something.
Taking the
like
syringe
that.
And he's,
it's terrifying.
This movie is fucking teddy bear torture porn. You are watching the most adorable, precious creature on the planet being brutalized. They hang him up on a dartboard as he's shivering uncontrollably.
Yes. Terrible.
It is so heartbreaking. And yes, the moment you talked about, so they dump water and they're like, okay, again, motherfucker, three rules. There are three fucking rules.
Oh,
Billy.
Yeah.
Billy.
Yeah.
Okay, and he has a glass of water, just oops, a little fucking oopsie oil spill onto his new incredible magical pet, and its back bubbles with boils, and it's disgusting.
Yeah,
it's so bad. It's so bad. And I think, like, okay, just going with this, just keep it going, just keep it going, is that their lack of empathy for the pain that this beautiful creature it feels is so like us. We don't give a fuck. We like, yeah, that probably do hurt, but it's cool. Look, like, we don't care. It's so savage. It's so fucked up.
I am, okay, genuinely ecstatic that you brought this up so early and that you brought it back here, Shalita, because this is like, it's a silly movie. Mm-hmm. We remember it's like, oh, it's the movie about the cute thing that becomes the scary thing that kills stuff. Mm-hmm. But there are so many possible, very insightful social commentaries that you can extract from this movie. And I was stunned rewatching this as an adult man. Like, I remember it vaguely as a kid. I don't even know that I ever actually saw it. I just knew that I was terrified of feeding a pet at night. That's it. That's my lasting legacy
from
it.
You get with the last rule, too. The last rule is a good rule.
That's the one. But so you have the commentary of like how we don't treat the planet right and the natural resources, right? But there's also a ton about consumerism. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's no mistake that this movie takes place at Christmas, that the father's first impulse when he sees it is, oh, we could sell this. And I forget his last name, but he calls it like the Porter Pett or whatever their last name is. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just about, hey, we're going to extract from the world and sell it. Like, it's no mistake that, by the way, he's like, he just discovers this new Chinese thing and he's like, I'm going to sell it to white people. Mm-hmm. There's a lot in there and I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, no, that's so right on. Like, that's so fucking right on. I'm so glad you took it there too, though, Zach. Like, wow, like, love that. So I'm gonna meet you there. So
I got,
like,
I got a deeper level coming up later. Just yes, wait. I'm going
that.
Deeper.
This is good. This is great. Okay, so
make it real.
I'm gonna meet you over there, and then you can take me deeper. So yeah, I felt the same fucking way, man, because. You know, the whole thing that you said about like the dad and like he was mediocre. He was at best, he's mediocre.
At best.
I mean, the truth is he's fucking a danger. He's a danger. Okay. That's the truth. And so he just, like you said, stumbled into this Asian, the Chinese, you know, Chinatown and fucking find something. And then the first thing, and this is something that, you know, it's kind of close to me, right? Like, I have a thing about the capitalizing on everything. Like, I really, it's such a bad habit that we have as a culture that if you see someone being good at something or enjoying something, you automatically encourage them to like make money doing it, which is a completely different energy, man. And so he found this beautiful, rare creature and immediately thought, I could capitalize off of this. And why is that? Because he can't capitalize off of anything else he's ever done.
He's a mediocre white man.
He's a bad,
and he just sees this like this beautiful, like very rare opportunity to like connect with this animal that's actually, because it's only three rules, it's the easiest fucking pet you'll ever have. It's easier than a dog. It's easier than a cat. And you fucking gave it. And just like when he got it, it was like the getting of the thing was more important than the having of it.
Yeah.
Because he didn't sit down with his son and just like, hey, you know, he was like, hey, I got this thing for you. You know, aren't I great? Didn't that make you feel good? Got some plans for it. Take care of it. But there was no genuine authentic connection or even like a genuine like spirit of like, hey, you know, this is rare and it only comes with three rules, but it's really important that we follow this.
And he was like at the inventors conference, you know, he dropped it off and then went to do what? I don't know. Hang out with the other inventors.
Nothing important.
No.
Nothing of success.
No. And I actually, on that same note, I loved that the love interest, Billy's love interest in this was like, no, fuck Christmas. Christmas is bad and everyone's pretending to be happy and they're all depressed. And I was like, okay, I like this. This is like a really interesting angle that I haven't seen before. Yep. And also the, oh my God, the story that she tells at the end about his dad.
Fucking Christ, the story of her dad dying. That is the most out of left field, truly shocking to my core, like gasped, jaw dropped. I had to rewind to be like, no, what's the context that I missed? Holy fuck, who wants to, I'm afraid to say it.
It's like a Black Mirror episode. The dad is like,
in the middle of this children's movie, the most dark, twisted, fucked up thing. Because by the way, this is rated PG. This is a PG.
That's crazy. That's so crazy.
Movie. This movie says maybe your parents should be there, but you know, it's suggested. This is a children's film where creatures are in blenders splattering blood, where a mom takes a butcher knife and stabs a pet until it dies. This is a children's film where a dog gets hung up on a string of lights left out in the cold to die.
Yeah.
Oh, and this is a children's film in which a main character recounts the story of why she hates Christmas. Her father disappeared Christmas week, and they were waiting, and they said, Daddy, are you coming home? No. Daddy, are you coming home? No. So finally she goes to light a fire, and that's when they notice the smell. And they open the fucking chimney and they find her father dressed in a Santa suit and he died in the fucking chimney. Are you kidding me?
That's horrifying.
Are you kidding?
It's so
hilarious.
Terrifying.
Horrifying and hilarious. Yeah, that is really unnecessary.
So unnecessary.
It's unnecessarily gruesome.
What does that have to do with the movie?
And they don't want nothing.
I'm a smart man. I went to a film college. I write scripts. I think about messages. I don't know what the fuck that has to do with this movie. And it is so
nothing.
No. And I'm gonna go. I'm gonna dip into my fun facts at the end here. Okay. The studio said, "Hey Joe, maybe take out the part where the dad gets stuffed in a chimney, breaks his neck, and dies." And he says, "No, for me, that is the movie."
That's baller though. To be like, "Yeah, fuck off." Like, no, that's the whole movie. Is that there's a dead Santa in a chimney?
Oh, wow. I'm out of breath. I someone else talk. I need a
sweating.
Cigarette.
I love the darkness in this movie. I mean, again, this movie starts, it's very regular. It's just a Christmas movie. Super basic. He's getting a gift for his son, whatever. And then, like, by the way, there's a million plot lines that are never, like, brought back. Like, his friend from work that's like, "Oh, I'm the
Judge
Reinhold manager." Yeah,
fucking
exactly.
Great Judge Reinhold's in this shit. Disappears.
Incredible disappears. Yeah. By the way, Mike Ehrmantraut from Breaking Bad plays a cop in this for like 5 seconds. And he's one of the cops in the cop car. And I was like, is that Mike from Breaking Bad? And it was really quickly. And then he's gone. But I so much of the darkness is offset. Like, it's like that moment where she's telling about her dad dying in the Christmas tree is 5 minutes after a 10-minute sequence of Gremlin, of what I would call Gremlin black box theater. There's gremlins with lipstick. They're doing movie tropes. They're like running around, and the bartender is just fucking serving them. They're smoking cigarettes. The most batshit sequence. I can't even really understand it. Gremlin, they're playing poker. He like pulls out a gun and shoots. It's all these movie tropes. I've never seen anything like that in a movie. And I was also just like, this is long. This is really long. Like, did the studio have no notes on this?
It's almost 2 hours. That's an hour and 42 minutes.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna jump into more fun facts because it's just perfectly timed.
Please.
One of the studio notes to Joe Dante and executive producer Steven Spielberg after seeing the first cut is that they said there were too many gremlins. And so Spielberg, proving forever that he is the goat of all goats, suggested cutting them all out and calling the movie People. Which is
so
just
saucy.
Like,
so
that's
saucy.
How you give it.
Yeah, I know. If I would have got that note back as the executive, exactly how you were reading it, how you were saying it, is how you would read it, and then you get to the end and you be like,
"What the fuck did you just say?"
Cut so much deeper than saying "fuck you." It's just like Steven looked him in the eyes through words and said, "You are dumb, and you will never be even close to as great as I am."
Exactly. So it'd be like, "All right, just don't worry about that note. Why are we even bothering him? You know how he's rude. If we didn't want to have a bad day, we should have sent no notes."
So speaking of Stevie Boy, did you notice the credits? Of the opening credits of this movie is just like a who's who of who shaped Hollywood for the next 20 to 30 years. And you're looking at me, so maybe not. Okay, so we've got Spielberg produced this. Kathleen Kennedy produced this. Like the heir to the Star Wars world right now. Written by Chris Columbus. That was the stupidest way to say that, by the way. The Star Wars world? What the fuck? I have a podcast.
Jesus.
You guys don't nod and enable me. Jesus.
It's okay. It's okay.
Written by Chris Columbus, who wrote Goonies, Home Alone, directed a little movie called Harry Potter. I mean, it's just the talent behind this film is kind of staggering.
So it's astounding, you know, that... I mean, they're not wrong, but they're also not right. That, you know, like the horror of it, like how hilarious this fucking movie is, like these egregious fucking details, like it's knowing everybody that was involved. It was like, so all y'all just agreed to let this shit fly, huh?
Yeah.
It's horror for
it
y'all.
It felt like a Jurassic. Was this made after Jurassic Park?
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because I feel like there's a lot of Jurassic Park elements in this.
I was thinking the whole time, it's like, what if Jurassic Park, instead of dinosaurs, they were just wacky little buddies?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Can we do a Google search real fast to find out?
Yeah.
Jurassic Park was
got inspired by some of the elements of Gremlins that he actually genuinely liked.
Jurassic Park was 93. I don't even think the book had been written yet, the Michael Crichton book. So yeah, I mean,
1984 Gremlins came out. So
yeah, I mean, that's 9 years earlier. That's a full decade. That's wild.
Crazy. That's really good. Like, I don't remember Jurassic Park that well to like make that connection, but fuck yeah. Like, the movie was baller. Like, it was fucking crazy. Them Gremlins, they have made an impression on the culture. Like, we use that word and it means something to all of us. It means the same thing. Even if you don't remember the plot, even if you don't remember Still by Still the movie, like, you know what the fuck a gremlin is, right? And we have a version of that. Like, I got two gremlins on my bed right now. Like, it's just like, that movie really made an impression on the culture. And yeah, it's, I can understand why he would have a lot of those elements in his later work. Like,
yeah.
I would love to talk a little bit about acting since we have a professional actor here. because the lead, Billy, or as I refer to him, Marty McNot-So-Fly, was driving me fucking insane in this movie. I don't know whether to blame him or the direction. Like, clearly he was not the important part of it. But why did he not once in the movie go, holy shit, what the fuck is going? Like, he just sat there and watched things. Did that tick you off as a performer?
I mean, honestly, for me, no, it didn't, because sometimes things make sense to us as audience members because we're watching it, but like everything an actor does, especially on like TV and film, a lot of it's not even their idea, they have, and knowing like how many big wigs were a part of this, like it was probably micromanaged. He was a terrible actor. Like, I think that just across the board, terrible, terrible. But he wasn't the only one, you know?
No,
like, there were a lot of terrible actors in this movie.
I'd say and exclusively so, almost.
Yeah, exclusively almost. Yeah, the mom, she was delightfully terrible. Like, she was terrible, but she was delightful. There was something delightful about that lady. But she was bad at acting. Yeah. Like, all the emotions, didn't believe a single one. But she was great.
Yeah,
So, yeah, that didn't bother me. It wasn't one thing. It was really all of it. And so I don't know why they made the choices that they made. Maybe it was like,
I like
this
your
is
insight,
more
though.
About our ideas, like more about the gremlin, the monsters,
100%.
Like getting that, looking at that note, like it's not about the people for him. It's about the gremlins. Like, so if the people were like great actors, maybe it would have taken away from the gremlins, you know?
We don't have time for characters. We're here to watch Gremlins breakdance, baby.
Yes!
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yes.
That leads me to a question I'd love to posit. How smart are the gremlins? Because, it starts out and Gizmo's a hamster. He's not smart. Gizmo doesn't know anything. Gizmo's cute. He can sing and that's fun. By the end of it.
Well, I will say, Miles, he can play the piano.
He can play the piano.
He does play some mean keys.
Yeah. By the end of it, they are like, they understand electronics. They're like hacking into the streetlights. They're like, you know, using a projector. A lot of them are talking.
Gizmo gets a driver's license.
Yeah, Gizmo, exactly. They're driving cars. Like, I guess that all is all over the place. Also, for some reason, they understand pop culture. Like, I feel like they're doing like movie spoofs in the bar.
Yeah.
Like the lipstick and the wig that the one girl.
Yes.
Puts on. I was like,
they
what
go
is
to
happening?
A movie theater. They go to the projector room. I'm I'm a human. I've been around movies. I don't know how to use a projector.
Not at all.
I'll sit in a seat and they put on Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. How did they do that? From the beginning, they chose the right reel.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it wasn't upside down, nothing. Yeah. The gremlins were really smart and super dumb because then there is that like 7-minute sequence that I call 1,000 Ways to Kill a Gremlin, where she blends them, she microwaves them, she boils them, she stabs them, she bats them. She, you know, like there was just like, she was taking them one by one. But can I tell y'all something? Okay, so don't tell nobody, okay?
Okay.
But,
Did you kill someone, Shalita?
Did you kill somebody with a bunch of
No. You know, when I watch when I watch movies with fight sequences, one of the things that I look for is what the other people are doing. Okay. And when you do that, it ruins the whole movie for you. There are great movies that are nominated for Oscars.
No.
And if you look at what the other people are doing while the fighting is happening, like, what the fuck is that? Like, sometimes all they're doing in the background is this.
No!
And like, there's like, it's an opportunity for the actor to go one mano a mano, yeah, and then like knock him out, and then ooh, someone's behind me, and then mano a mano. But the other 16 people, like,
just
if you look at Kill Bill, if you look at Kill Bill, they're doing Michael Jackson choreography. Yeah. So it's like 30 people. This is 30 people just like moonwalking and doing, yeah, like shit with their hands. So the gremlins are smart, but in that sequence, 1,000 Ways to Kill a Gremlin, they are just as dumb as humans.
They're waving around.
Because they're just waiting around for an opportunity to like get the main character.
You've ruined every movie possible for me. I refuse to pay attention to that. How do you? We've gotten to the point of the podcast where I think it would be we'd be remiss to not mention this. And I promised you earlier that I was going to go deeper. I was going to go deeper on my reading of the movie. But from the first frame of the movie, you go, oh, this is going to be sort of racist, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, yeah. I know exactly what you're about to talk about.
In the Chinatown.
It brings us into Chinatown, and it is like seedy Chinatown, red light district. Mm-hmm. We have, I don't know if he ever gets a name, but the original owner of the Mogwai. He's smoking a pipe. He's an old Chinese man with like a glass eye. He's got traditional garb. And you go, okay, you kind of just note it. Interesting. That makes me mildly uncomfortable in the modern day, but maybe that flew in 1982, whatever. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go on a little bit of monologue for a little bit here, and I'm going to have you guys jump in.
Yeah.
my favorite thing to do. So this idea was popularized in Justin Simien's Dear White People. I don't know if you've heard this, but there's a moment where Tessa Thompson writes a paper that Gremlins is all about suburban white fear of black culture. And then Tessa Thompson's character goes, the gremlins are loud, they talk in slang and are addicted to fried chicken and freak out when you get their hair wet. So I'm like, I was like, that's so funny.
Wow.
I want to watch this movie through that lens. And what I got is actually not just a movie about suburban fear of black culture, but just xenophobia all over. So that I cannot believe that it's not the actual genuine intention of the movie. And I'm curious if you guys picked up on that at all. But in the first 10 minutes, you have the old white racist ranting about how foreign cars are worse than American built cars.
Yeah.
Right. And like, why is, and they bring that back three times. You have this character ranting about like, these damn gremlins, these foreigners coming, American made's the best. Okay, I have so much. I like literally wrote a fucking thesis paper in my notes. Okay.
Does it look like an Adderall notebook? Or just
I was feeling it. So what I think it actually is, the lens that I watched it through, and then I found a really brilliant article by this woman, Wendy Allison Lee, where she talked about, she's an Asian American woman, and she talked about how it's about the white suburban fear of black Americans, but also the model minority myth in Asian communities. And Gizmo, he's our model minority, okay? He's meant to be
the
help.
He's good. He's the good boy.
Yeah.
He's the good boy. Literally,
he's the good one.
He's a Mogwai, but that's some Chinese name. I don't know. I call him Gizmo. He seems to love it.
This all tracks. Yeah, that all totally tracks for sure. Because I remembered especially like when the guy is going off. I was like, oh, is the name Gremlins from like he was like, oh, I was in the war and like there were Gremlins. I was like, Jesus Christ, that is so blatant and
learning that it's a word that they used over there for you know the Vietnamese or something like gypped. Gypsy.
Yeah.
And it's something that we just say, but it actually has like a terribly racist history. Yeah.
By the way, gypped is something that was in my vocabulary until like a year ago because I had no idea. Sure. And a Try Guys fan called me out on it, and I was grateful that they did. Okay, so his name, Gizmo, literally means gadget, which is to be the helpful little sidekick. You're my helper. You are my Gizmo, right? You're the good. Like, so Asian Americans are expected, as the model minority, expected to be good, expected to be helpful, expected to sing a song and make us happy. Then we contrast that with how they portray the gremlins, right? We talked through the ones that they say in Dear White People. But they are addicted to fried chicken. We have that crazy sequence that we talked about, Miles. They're drunk at the bar. They're breakdancing. There's literally one who wears a balaclava, a face mask, and mugs her with a gun. These are
fear. Yeah.
And by the way, this is happening at an Irish bar, the original suburban white fear of the foreigners. This is just like xenophobia the movie, and the gremlins are just portraying everything that white suburban America fears is going to come in. I mean, this is like literally there goes the neighborhood, the movie. I rest my case.
Yeah. Wow. That all
pretty
totally
fucking incredible, right?
And crazy. And it's also crazy that like you're correct. Like that probably wasn't the original intention, but that fully tracks. And
it's
like
all there.
The xenophobia tracks throughout the whole movie. Yeah.
The guy, the racist guy that we were talking about, they're sympathizing with him at one point and they go, he's been like that since he lost his job. He just wants someone to listen. And I'm like, that's literally what they say about racist white people. Like, my God.
Yeah.
Exactly. No, like I didn't have the same like lenses that you have.
I don't think anyone should. It's a children's movie.
Nor did I. Justin,
with the Justin Timian, like the specific like that breakdown that it had already been broken down by people like before. Like legit, I pulled it up on Netflix. Just because it was around Christmas time and it felt good to like watch a movie that I thought was like kind of funny, but like wanted to like check it out. But when I watched it, because these are my frames of reference. So there's this amazing book called Heavy by K.S.A. Lehman. And
this episode. Hell yeah.
it's an autobiography and it's about him. He's a black man and, you know, his mom, it was a really educated, like she was a professor and he grew up like reading and she was incredibly intelligent, but, you know, was a human. Right. Mm-hmm. And so there is a section where he goes to Smith College and he starts writing and he writes these like really impressive satires on white people and white culture specifically. And, you know, in selling with marketing, they say like it's about the story that you're telling is the problem and the solution. And so if you can really articulate the problem, then you can sell your solution, you know, but the first job is to articulate the problem. And, you know, when you're nefarious, you say, hey, there's something wrong with you, Zach. And for $79.99, you'll feel better about who you are as a human being because you've got a lot of flaws.
I'm interested. Yeah, I believe that I am flawed and I want whatever you're selling me.
Exactly. 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 So with that, like he's in this, like writing these pieces and he's getting like locally, like kind of like famous, like people are giving him like high fives and stuff. And his mom pulls him up and she's like dating this really toxic guy who he calls like the liberator or the some shit, you know, he's just like talks the good talk, but he's like full of shit. But they get him on the phone and they're like, we read your stuff. Like, what are you doing? And he was just like, yeah, I'm just like telling the truth. And they were like, you know, you should really like focus on yourself. Like, if you want to help Black people, you need to talk to Black people on the campus. Like, mm-hmm. Who your audience is, like who you're writing for, is really important, mm-hmm. because it's going to fall back on you. So he goes to his editor and he says, like, you know, basically as much, like, I want to write, I think I might have the details of the story wrong, but this mm-hmm. is basically what happened. He's like, I want to write this piece, but I want to write it, you know, with this in mind, like with the other black students on the campus in mind. And the editor said specifically, listen, like, in order to be successful, you're going to have to talk to white people. And this is who your audience is white wow. people. So I know, like, you think you're helping Black people by talking to them, but talk to them in a way that white people would understand. And so the opposite of that is focusing on your community as a part of liberation, right? Mm-hmm. And so just getting really saucy, I was for a time part of the People's Institute for Survival and Beyond, and they do anti-racism mm-hmm. workshops, anti-racism. And so one of the principles of anti-racism is basically like, racism is something that is done, and so it can be undone, right? And so you have to be able to, like with marketing, describe the problem mm-hmm. and be able to get your definition straight, you know, but be able to like really shape out what is white supremacy, what is it, because it's something that's done. So with those two things in mind, when I watched Gremlins, I thought, yeah, this is super white. This is how white people are.
Yeah,
this is
right.
White people. This is how white people govern. This is how white people uh-huh. parent.
For
this
sure.
is how white people do community with each other. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole like knowing that you have a predator in your community and everyone making excuses for them.
Yeah. Oh, you know, right. Like, yeah, the whole custody. Yeah.
Exactly. So like, and so it's like,
no one expected the Gremlins episode to go this hard. And I
love
it. I love it.
It's so great.
You said wait in the water. You were like, I'm ready for it. So I was like, I'll meet you. I'll just meet you. I'll meet you where you take me.
That was great.
That's such a great point though, about the whole cop scene. They're just like, no, this is like, there's no way. And they're like hanging out with the Mogwai for so long. Yeah. That's
exactly. But for me, I want to, if we're going to talk about like, you know, breaking down white supremacy, it's like really putting the lens where it belongs, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like mm-hmm. the movie, it's you know, the Gremlins do represent Blackness, definitely, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But this is not a movie about Blackness. This is not a movie about model minorities. Mm-hmm. This is a movie that uses Blackness and uses model minorities the same way that white mm-hmm. people use model minorities and Black people build, you know, so to have their frame, you know.
Excellent
so
it's point.
Like, yeah, in order to like really understand, it's like, yeah, that's exactly what happens, like word for word. And it's really good because it was made by a bunch of white people who knew they were making a movie about themselves, but didn't know what they were revealing about.
Wow. They didn't know how, they didn't know how piercing their lens truly was. And you're right, like I say it's about these things. No, it's about whiteness, especially as... you know, nothing changes at the end. It's like the guy's like, you're not ready yet.
How destructive whiteness is, and how like at the end of the day, like the white father had zero empathy for the destruction that he introduced to his own community.
Yeah.
So it's like whiteness eats itself. Like you think it's about preservation, but it's preserving a small few, just like global warming, you know, it's all circling back. It's like, stop, please stop.
My headphones are smoking from all of the fire that we just dropped. If I could make it dumber for just a brief moment, I also would recommend that you watch it with subtitles, because he calls Gizmo Giz, which on my TV just appeared as Jizz over and over and over again.
Oh, that's really nice. He does also say Gizmo Kaka before he shoots a gun at him. towards the end. Yeah. Which is, I guess they can speak. But also, by the way, to that same point, the news coverage of the entire event is they're just like, oh yeah, it was like rioters. Everyone was, you know, freaked out. But it just totally ignores, like,
don't get us started, Miles.
Anyway, sorry. Yes. Yeah, I love it.
That's I'm going to move us on to some fun facts because we could talk about this all day and we should. But I'm either going to make your life or ruin it when I tell you that Gizmo was voiced by Howie Mandel.
That's right. I didn't look that up and holy shit.
Blew my mind. And I had the mistake of figuring that out, researching that in the middle of the movie. I went to go make some lunch in the middle. Got the fun facts. And it's really hard to look at Gizmo the same way when you know that Howie's behind the controls.
And I will say about that, the most jarring part of knowing it's Howie Mandel is at the very end of the movie, he says, oh, he has one more thing to say to you, Billy. And he opens the box up. And he's a Yamagwai, right? So he's not really speaking English, but he says, bye, daddy.
He says,
Miles.
He goes,
Miles,
he says, bye, Billy. I'm going to put the audio right in, right here. Okay, so tell me if this is bye, Billy, or bye, daddy.
You should play it at the end of the episode and let the people decide.
This is not a blue dress, white dress thing. This is not like the thing.
Yeah, that's right.
Were you watching this with a ball gag or something?
Because, yeah, I was in my little sort of, I was in chain mail and no pants.
Oh my
God. Bye, daddy.
Bye, daddy. That's what I heard.
I want you to be right. More than anything. we talked before about how the fuck is this a kids movie? And actually, because of this and another Spielberg classic, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, those two are credited with ushering in the PG-13 rating. So thank you, Gremlins, for that. So let's talk about the creature design. One fun fact is that the reason that they have no bright lights as one of the three rules is an old sci-fi trick. It is because they did not want to show the costume, the gremlins when they did not have to.
Oh, that's great. I also love that you don't see the Mogwai until like 18 minutes in. Like they keep it from you for a while. I will say one last thing that I remembered was in the kitchen scene, you can see someone's head operating the puppet that is the gremlin.
No way.
In the lower left corner of the thing. And it's a quick shot, but I was like, that's someone's head. That is someone's head under the table kind of being like holding up.
You know, we did
puppet.
Brush over it, but like it is worth calling out how much of a joy it is to watch a movie with pure practical effects, all puppetry. The cocoons they hatch out of are all practical. It's just so fun. It's tactile. Obviously, it's goofy as fuck at sometimes, but man, it's great.
The cocoons were gross. Oh my God, so gross. They were so nasty. Ugh. I was like, just smash them. You know how you get that irrational like rage when you see like textures or like really gross and you're like, I just want to smash that into oblivion.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted to do with those cocoons. They were disgusting. Don't let those things live.
It's so great. And I also say, I think that like the scene right before that where the regular Mogwai are eating the chicken and you see their lips and they're like,
Super
so disgusting. Oh, it was
awful.
Really close up on like their weird, they're like, oh man, their furry hands. Yeah, that was tough. That was tough to see.
So it was suggested that they should use puppets instead of the proposed stop motion idea. So as a compromise, the studio suggested, what if we do a spider monkey in a suit? And so you guys look horrified. I wanted to let that land for a second.
That's horrible.
So they did a test at Joe Dante, the director's office, in which the animal went fucking crazy when they put a mask on him. He tore the office apart and shat everywhere, covered his office in poop. Dante screamed at the trainer to get the animal. And then Chris Wallace, who basically stopped and turned to him and said, so puppets?
That's
some good behind the scenes story.
That's a really good behind the scenes story.
Yeah. And then this one kind of blew my mind. This movie was a huge hit. One of the biggest hits of the 80s. It was actually the fourth highest grossing movie of the year. It opened at number 2 the weekend that it came out because it opened the same day as Ghostbusters. Can you imagine?
Whoa, that's crazy.
What a time.
That was a crazy weekend. Ghostbusters is great, too.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, I mean, that's that reminds me of when Drag Me to Hell and Up came out the same weekend. God damn.
Very different movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, Drag Me to Hell and Up? Yeah.
Yeah, that was the best weekend of my life. All right, well, now, this was so much fun, but the time has come for us to decide, is this movie a pleasure, a guilty pleasure, or just plain guilty? Shalita, we're going to ask you to give it a designation, but really, this is your chance to kind of give us a speech to the people. Should they see it? Why should they see it?
Yeah, fuck yeah. You should totally fucking see this movie. You know, like, we fucking, like, we talked about it from the rooter to the tutor, you know, the whole thing. You know, we looked at it from the lens of 2021 and you know, looking at it for everything that it offered us about whiteness and white supremacy, but also, like, what it offered us, you know, as far as, like, horror and, like, you know, sometimes you want to be scared, but you don't want to be that scared, you know? You might want to act a little bit, you know? So, yeah, you watch The Gremlins. Yeah. I think it's perfect. And it's the holidays, right? It's the Christmas holidays. You want to be subversive? You want to piss Nanny off, Auntie, whatever? Put on The Gremlins. Throw that bitch. It's a holiday movie. The first 5 minutes is just nothing but holiday
Christmas shit.
So, yeah, I think you should do it.
Holy shit. I would not dare attempt to follow that. That is the perfect answer. And will speak for all of us. Shalita, you are in a new scripted podcast series along with our co-host Garrick, who's not here, Haunt the Johnsons. Please tell us. I mean, made by literally some of my favorite people in the world, has some of the funniest people in the world, stars Kristen Schaal. What is this show?
It is a wonderful little podcast. It's like a blend between podcast and audiobook, right? And so, real quick in a nutshell, the Johnsons, I play Miss Johnson, if you're nasty, is a psychiatrist. And my husband, you know, is a lovely man with many interests. He's currently writing a book, but our daughter is a preteen who sees ghosts. So we move her out of, you know, the ghost, the haunted house that she was in, to, unfortunately, an even worse haunted house up in, I think we're up in New York State. You know, fact check me on this.
You'll have to listen and see how much you got right.
yeah, exactly. I read it. But yeah, so it's my daughter trying to figure out how to live as someone who hears ghosts and helping the ghosts find out what they want from her. And yeah, it's just a wild little ride. It's a good little time. And yeah, it won't make your ears bleed.
That's good.
It won't make your ears bleed. I mean,
really nice.
It's genuinely, again, made by some of my favorite people on the planet, near and dear to mine. So I want you to check it out for that reason. But if not, you got Shalita, you got Joel Kim Booster, you got Kristen Schaal, you got Garrick Bernard, so many more. I mean, it's just oozing with talent. I mean, Andy Peters, one of my great buddies, Kurt Brownler's in it. Like, God, it's just top to bottom, does not stop. Shalita, this was a blast. What a treat to have you. Where can the people find you?
Oh, you can find me. Hopefully you can't find me. I actually try not to be found by strangers.
Yeah.
I do have a social media. It's my name. when I do want people to know where I am, I post. But if, as you can see, it's not very often.
Well, they can go listen to Haunt the Johnsons. And they can look forward to you on the screen, big and small. And go watch You Season 3. What a treat. Miles, where are you?
Miles Bond on Instagram. You can hit me up.
Hell yeah. I'm at...
Oh, Miles!
I'm at Corndity on all the things. Again, Shalita, such a treat. Lovely to have you. And until next time...
Bye, Daddy.
He has something to say to you.
Bye, Daddy.